Straight Talk on WRHI is brought to you by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax, you're with Founders. Now live from Substation 2 on Cherry Road in Rock Hill, Manning Kimmel.
And a good afternoon. Welcome into Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop. My name is Manning Kimmel. The program is called Straight Talk. We do it every weekday afternoon, talking about Rock Hill, Fort Mill, TKK, the great county of York, and everything else up and down I-77. And we do it right here on WRHI, South Carolina's seven-time radio station of the year. Our broadcast presented by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax, you're with Founders. Our thanks to our co-sponsor today, Comporium, your friendly neighborhood tech giant. Good Pharmacy is with us, your hometown pharmacy. Ebenezer Road to Camden Avenue in Rock Hill, as is highspeedweb.net. It streams our signal 24/7, 365. Well, you open up the microphone, you look across the table, and who's here? She's back, Liz Gilmore-Williams. We had her on here about, a year and a half or so ago to talk about a book that she authored called No Ordinary Soldier, subtitled My Father's Two Wars.
That's
and
right.
Here you are.
Hi, Manning.
How you been?
Great to be here. I've been fine. Thank you for asking.
Well, I'm glad you're here. First of all, before we get into the book, tell us a little bit about you. To refresh people about who Liz Gilmore-Williams is.
Well, thanks for the opportunity, Manning. I am a retired writer and editor. I work for the federal government, for the Government Accountability Office, which was the General Accounting Office when I worked there, and also the Congressional Budget Office. So I worked as a professional writer and editor for my career, and I always wanted to have a book.
I got to stop you right
yes.
there.
Yes.
Was your job to try to make government language easier for people to understand?
It was. It actually was, and I think I did a pretty good job of it because I'm all about straight talk, believe it or not, plain talk. I don't like flowery language. I don't like gobbledygook, and I did try to do that in my work.
Good for you. And you were there how long?
I was there 10 years.
10 years.
And I enjoyed it very much. I'm glad to be away from it now, though.
Yeah, I think most people are glad to be away from Washington right now. So here you are. You decided you wanted to write a book.
Mm-hmm.
And the subject material just happened to be a personal topic. Tell me how you got into this.
In 2003, my mother moved from my girlhood home and gave me all of the letters between her and my father from World War II. Now, my parents had a bit of forethought because he sent her letters back to her from the war. So I have both sides of life, my mother's letters and my father's letters.
So he would read your mom's letters
yes.
and then send them back so she could hold on to them.
Right. For safekeeping. So I have a collection that's pretty rich of 300 letters, and I don't know how many collections there are out there that have both sides, but mine does, and I'm very fortunate.
So when you started culling through these letters mm-hmm. that your mother gave you, mm-hmm. you started hearing a whole story about another side of your father you had no idea.
Absolutely. See, my father died when I was 18. So it never occurred to me to ask him about his war days because an 18-year-old girl wouldn't think of that. Maybe a boy would, but not a girl. So in 2003, when I got the letters, I did start looking through them. I said, yeah, these are pretty substantive. You know, a lot of World War II letters aren't. They just say, hey, Mom, how you doing? I'm okay. And there was censorship. So, of course, there wasn't a whole lot of war-type talk that could be, you know, could be transpired. But nonetheless, they were substantive. My father had a way of giving his opinion on things that really, you know, that took place and really gave you a sense of who he was. And then my mother would respond. So it became quite interesting, really.
So back in those days when the letters, before the letters went out, mm-hmm. somebody read them and approved them and then mailed them. Same thing coming back in. Would they read the incoming mail as well? I don't think so.
No. Mother's letters weren't censored. In fact, my mother asked my dad that in one of the letters she wrote. He said, no, your letters aren't censored.
Yeah, but he had to send them back out.
Yeah, but, well, they may have looked at them briefly, but right. I don't think. I mean, she didn't know any military secrets, so it wasn't. I'll tell you what, though. The servicemen had all kinds of ways of getting around the censorship.
Ah, but they didn't.
Yeah. There was, in one case, I had found a little scrap of paper in one of my dad's letters that said, I am on Kwajalein. Now, obviously, that got past the censor, or it wouldn't have been in the letter. And I'm even wondering if my mother ever saw it, but I sure saw it. Kind of gave me chills. And another time, he told her, look at the page, back of page 3 on the letter I sent you prior to this one, and you will see something written lightly in pencil. Well, it was, he had written there Funafuti, which, Funafuti, yes, which is a destination in the Ellis Islands where he thought he was going to be sent. He did not end up going there, but still, he had penciled it so lightly, you would really have to be looking for it to see it. So, they tried all kinds of things to thwart the censors.
Yeah. So, with the censorship in place, mm-hmm. your dad was not able to say, I'm over here in France, I'm over here in Germany, or I'm at this battle. He couldn't do any of that.
No, he could not. No.
But he could talk about being at war?
He talked about events that were going on. Not so much with his unit, but in general in the war. Like, he would talk about, you know, why can't they get Hitler? They got so-and-so, you know, that sort of thing. And current events, he would give his opinion of current events and the way things should go or shouldn't go. You know, in the military, everybody has an opinion.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
So the censors would allow the opinions.
They would allow that, yes. Allow that.
Did you ever find a letter where... Your father said, my commanding officer is an idiot?
No, not that. But there were letters that were shredded that, you know, they had cut whole chunks out of the letters.
Oh, my.
And then the next time he'd write to my mother, as you noticed, the last letter was, you know, kind of cut up by the censor, and I'll tell you why later, and, you know, that kind of thing.
Oh, but, my gosh.
And now, when he got over to Saipan, he was in the Pacific. The censorship decreased tremendously. And, in fact, in Korea, they ended censorship entirely. It started out a little bit in the Korean conflict, and then they ended it. It wasn't worth the time it took to censor the letters.
So the two wars were World War II and Korea?
No.
No. Aha. Uh-huh. All right.
The two wars, the subtitle of my book is My Father's Two Wars. Excuse me. And the reason for that is, when I did my research, which took me 8 years, I discovered an internal struggle that my father had that I was not aware of, and it came out in the research. So that is what I'm referring to with my father's two wars.
So the second, so one war was the conflict itself, pardon me, and the second conflict was internal.
An inner conflict, okay. Yes. And that's, that's the ending of the book, so I'm not going to go into that anymore. But
so the internal struggle was just being there and having to deal with the whole thing of war?
I can't comment.
Well, you've got to give us something about the book.
That's the ending of the book, and it's kind of my quest, because I will give you this much. My father had a very bad temper as I grew up. And I tiptoed around on eggshells, my sisters and I all did. And so kind of what drove me to look at the letters was to see if I could discover why my father was this way. And, in fact, I did.
Ha. So, all right.
Yeah.
So you wrote the book back in 2016.
It came out in 16, right. Yes.
Came out in 16. So it's been out there about a year and a half.
Mm-hmm.
And what has happened to your life since you wrote the book?
Oh, my goodness. Wonderful things have happened. First of all, I've been named to the South Carolina Speakers Bureau, known as the Humanities Out Loud program. And with that program, I can travel all over the state. I can talk to nonprofit groups or public organizations. I do a whole PowerPoint on World War II in the Central Pacific. And if anybody wants me to come to speak to their group, I'm available. You can go on the website, South Carolina Humanities, and look for my name. And I'd love to come and speak to your group. They compensate me to come. So
it's SCHumanities.org.
SCHumanities, I guess, .org, yeah, or .com. But it's called the Humanities Out Loud program, yes.
Humanities Out Loud. I'm writing this down.
And as I say, any nonprofit or public organization can have me come and speak. And there is a whole roster of speakers. And they speak on, there are authors and there are scholars. Different people speak on different things. And my particular topic is World War II in the Central Pacific.
So you somehow found this group.
I did. I did, yes.
And you all discussed what the topic was.
Yes.
And you became an approved speaker.
Yes, you have to apply. There's an application process.
I see.
Yes.
All right.
And also, some other great things that have happened. This, my book won an award. I entered into a contest known as the International Book Awards. They're based out in California. And I did not, for my category, which was military history, I placed as a finalist. My book did not win, but there was only one winner and two finalists. So I think I did pretty well.
Good for you.
And the winner was a book known as From Student to Warrior by a man named Wilford Hale. And it has to do with the ROTC program at the College of William and Mary. So congratulations to him.
So you became a finalist.
I became a finalist, yes.
Well, good for you. Well, that's great. Now, with all that, has this opened up doors for you in terms of being out there on the circuit on a regular basis, talking about the book, talking about your knowledge of the Central Pacific during World War II?
Well, I'm hoping to become a celebrity because really like to have my book become a movie. I think it's movie-worthy, but at any rate, I will tell you this. I have about 350 followers on Twitter, and I have some pretty heavy hitters following me. I have some generals following me on Twitter, and I'll tell you this. I've connected with three people whose father served in my dad's unit. In fact, I just got an email yesterday of one of these people, so that is incredibly gratifying to have those connections.
It's amazing that they're still alive.
Really great. Well, they're the children.
Children,
the
okay.
Children of, yeah, they're like my age, which we won't go into my age, but yeah.
All right, so you're having a lot of fun with this.
I am having a lot of fun, yes.
Traveling all over the place.
Yes.
Talking all the time.
Right. Everyone I talk to, I give them a business card. Here's my book, yeah. Right. Because when you're retired, people want to know what do you do? How do you spend your time? And for me, it's a very simple answer. I'm constantly promoting my book. So
it's like
I have a cause in life.
Good for you.
Yeah.
So the book, now, you know, there's all different kinds of ways, and we ought to take a minute about this, because getting a book published is not the easiest thing in the world, right?
Correct.
Tell me a little bit about the challenges you had with that.
Yeah, there were many. I gave it a year and a half to get either an agent or a publisher.
Right.
I had about 8 top New York agents request my final manuscript, which to get that far is pretty good. In fact, one of the ones that requested it was the agent for Laura Hillenbrand, who wrote Unbroken. And by the way, if you liked Unbroken, you'll like my book.
Mm-hmm.
And Louis Zamperini was in the same Air Force as my dad.
Really?
So there's that connection, yes. But there were no takers. And I decided, you know, I'm not going to give it 10 years like J.K. Rowling did for her Harry Potter books. I don't have the time. I'm older than J.K. Rowling was. So I decided to self-publish. And I found a woman in Charlotte, Deborah Funderburk. She has a company called Berkwood Media. And she helped me, guided me through the process, connected me with a printer. She just really served as a liaison. She offers a very reasonable fee. And I have a very, if you want to page through my book, I have a very high quality product,
right,
printing wise, and I'm very satisfied with her services. So that's the route I took.
Berkwood Media.
Berkwood Media, yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So she basically took your manuscript.
Yes, and she formatted it.
She formatted
yes.
it. And acted like an editor. An editor.
Well, I actually had another professional editor prior to that. But, yes, she did give me some consultation on that. And then I had an artist friend of mine design my cover.
Oh, good. Let me see that cover again.
Yeah.
There he is.
Right.
There he is. That's a good picture.
Yeah.
That's a great
thank you.
Picture.
He was a handsome man, my father.
Yeah. And your dad passed away.
Oh, early, 1970. The week I went off to college, my father passed away.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, my gosh.
Yes.
Jeez.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And I had two younger sisters, too, so it was tough for my mother. Yeah.
Mm. So that's too bad. That's too bad. So you got the book published, and once you go through that process, does she tell you how many you should start off in terms of getting printed?
I started off with 50. I had a book launch party out at Sun City.
Right.
I had a website going.
Right.
And then other than that, it was just word of mouth and me getting out there and promoting like I've been doing.
And as you needed more books, you would just tell them to print more books.
Exactly.
More books,
exactly.
More books,
and
more books.
It's on Amazon. Of course, it's on Amazon, and it's on Barnes & Noble, so people can order it online.
But as you pointed out to me, in this world that you're in, you're a much better promoter of your own product than having it on. I mean, Amazon sounds sexy, but really, your book is one of 10,000 that are on there.
Oh, more than that. Yeah, that's the thing. I have heard from fellow authors who have been published by even a small press that they don't get much marketing support at all, and you end up really having to do it all yourself anyway. So I really have no regrets, because actually when I do sell a book, I'm getting a lot more money, profit, than I would if I had gone with a publisher, quite honestly.
Well, good for you.
Yeah.
And you didn't do it to make money anyway.
No, I did not. No.
You just did it because you wanted to write the story about your dad.
Exactly.
Good for you. Well, we're going to take our mid-program break. Remind you that you are listening to Straight Talk, live from Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop, presented by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax. You're with Founders. Our thanks to our co-sponsor today, Comporium, your friendly neighborhood tech giant. Of course, we broadcast live every day from Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop, pardon me, where we prepare fresh subs and salads 7 days a week. And there's only one way to do it, and even Chris Chamberlain knows how to do it. Are you ready, Chris? Here we go, nice and loud. So come on, slice, slice, garden, garden, garden. He's got it. Back after these words.
This is Straight Talk.
Hey, Alex, what's been added to the Substation 2 menu that smells so good?
It's Substation 2's new thick sliced bacon. Add it to any sandwich and you're going to get an exciting new taste. Bacon makes everything better.
Slice, slice, slice. Garden, garden, garden. Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop, now serving Diet Dr. Pepper.
Good Pharmacy, taking care of families for four generations.
This is pharmacist Kia Hicklin. We have six pharmacists that are knowledgeable, friendly, and ready to get to know your family and their needs.
My mom loves Good Pharmacy.
Ebenezer Road at Camden Avenue, Rock Hill.
Trying to find your happy place? Look no further than Founders Federal Credit Union. Whether you need a quick getaway or a relaxing stay at a beach resort, a vacation loan from Founders can make it happen. With great terms and a low rate, you can focus more on spending time with your family and less on your budget. Apply online at foundersfcu.com/vacation, by phone at 800-845-1614, or at one of our convenient locations. Not a Founders member? Visit relaxjoinfounders.com to see if you qualify for membership. Founders Federal Credit Union is federally insured by NCUA.
Hey, Alex, what makes Substation 2's roast beef so popular?
That's easy. Our roast beef is just like our ham and turkey. All natural, no additives or nitrates, 98% fat-free, just beef, salt, and pepper.
Fresh meats, cheeses, and produce every day. Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop, now serving Diet Dr. Pepper.
Straight Talk continues now on WRHI. Brought to you by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax. You're with Founders.
And back we are here at Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop. Our guest this afternoon, local author Liz Gilmore Williams. And she is the proud author of a book called No Ordinary Soldier, a story about her dad. My father's two wars. One war was what he actually did, fighting as a soldier. The other war she won't tell us anything about. It's in the book, right?
Right. Surprise ending.
Surprise ending. Anyway, I asked Liz if she could read us one of these letters, and she happened to select one that I'm sure most people would identify with, and that involves Pearl Harbor, because your dad was a Pearl Harbor survivor. Is that correct?
Right, but actually this isn't from a letter. This is just going to be a little piece of prose, because my father couldn't write anything about the attack, because that was truly censored.
Okay, gotcha. Go ahead.
Well, let me set this up. Prior to December 7th, from the 3rd of December to the 6th, the entire island of Oahu had gone on maneuvers and had a huge military exercise. And December 6th, Frank Knox, Secretary of the Navy, announced, "The Navy is ready to meet any threat." On December 7th, Ernest Gillespie, a private in Herb's company, Herb was my dad's name, got up, shaved, dressed, and went to Mass at Hickam's gym, then to the chow hall for breakfast. He walked back to the barracks and sat down on its front steps, looking across the airfield. He soon spied planes almost grazing the barracks roof, planes marked with the red rising sun of Japan, dubbed the meatball by the GIs. As the plane zoomed overhead, Gillespie yelled inside to those in the barracks, "We're being attacked!" He ran two blocks to the motor pool as an ear-splitting boom sounded from Pearl Harbor, the first target. Smoke billowed over the naval base. Hickam's air raid siren blared.
Wow.
So that's where my father was. He was in the base operations building at Hickam. The only thing to protect him that day was his helmet and the building. And the only reason the operations building did not get bombed is because Japanese intel had it as an officer's club. So if it were not for misinformation on the part of the Japanese, I might not be here today.
Jeez, Sue. And you, I'm sure when your dad came back, you were too young to be interested.
I wasn't born yet. Yeah.
That's right. You, I mean, right. You weren't even around.
I wasn't born.
So
yeah.
All that went right down with him.
Honestly, I really didn't give it any thought till I was probably in my 40s that my father had survived Pearl Harbor. Because, you know, it's just something you don't think about when you're coming up and you're busy establishing your career and everything. And then when you have some time to reflect back on your life a little bit, you start realizing, my goodness, you know, my dad witnessed history, and it's a pretty thrilling thing.
Mm. Wow. And don't you wish that he was here today so that you could quiz him left and right and let him tell you his story, if he would tell you?
I'll tell you what, my mother remembered quite a bit. Of course, she wasn't there, but just even the war on the home front is such a fascinating subject. You know, she had to wait in line at textile mills to get two pair of stockings that were allotted to people, you know, because of rationing.
Sure. Did your mom work at all in World War II? As far
she
as
she did not work in the defense agency, she was a secretary.
Well, I tell you what, that was a wonderful time in American history.
And I think, Manning, that is really the lesson of World War II. My dad was no hero, but he did his bit.
Yeah.
And everybody did their bit.
Yeah, that's
and
right.
That's why we succeeded.
And nobody complained.
Nobody complained.
They did what they had to do.
Nobody sued anybody.
And what was really interesting is when they came home from the battle and came out of the factories, you know, they just went back to living their lives.
Exactly.
It was a whole different time, a whole
exactly.
different era.
Yeah.
So you are going to be doing, you've been doing speaking, and now you've got another one coming up here in November sometime.
I have one coming up in November that your listeners might be interested in because it's at the State Library in Columbia.
Right.
They have a series called Speaker at the Center, and it's at 12 o'clock noon on November 8th. And they have different authors from around the state come, and that will be my day to come and talk about my book.
So tell me, when you go to these presentations, do you start talking about the history of the Pacific during World War II and then kind of slide into your book?
Or what I have a couple ways that I like to bring the audience into my talk. So I start out with how many people had a parent in World War II or a grandparent.
Yeah.
And that gets people raising their hands. And then I ask them, how many of those parents or grandparents actually talked about the war? And then the hands go down, all except for a few. Because, as you know, that they were known as the silent generation.
Yeah.
They did not talk about it. And that's one of the other reasons why this subject was so fascinating to me, because my father didn't talk about it.
You know, you wonder what it would have been like if they, in World War II, the soldiers had just the, what would you call it? Just if they just had this phone, this that we all carry,
yes,
and be able to do FaceTime like modern day soldiers are able to do with their families at home, what the story would have been then?
Very interesting, yeah, to think about. Yes.
All right. Yeah. So now, where do you go from all this? I mean, you're out on the bureau. You're you live over in Sun City, amongst other places, and you're just going to keep doing this?
I'm going to keep. I told my husband I'm going to have a movie or I'm going to die trying, because I really think my story is movie worthy.
And so how do you go about tackling the movie side of this?
Well, I don't know. I there is a new phenomenon known as influencer marketing. And what you try to do is you try to get someone who's a very famous person who has a lot of influence interested in your book or your project. So I'm going to read up on that. I'm going to head in that direction. But in the meantime, if I never get there, it's fine. I'm having a lot of fun. I go to a lot of street fairs, and I do very well selling my book in person. I have a cookie called an Old Glory cookie. It's an original World War II recipe. It uses molasses and raisins and walnuts. It's kind of a chewy cookie that would stay moist for shipping to the soldiers.
Yeah.
And I give those out. I kind of bring people into my little circle with the cookie. It kind of hooks them in, and then I start talking about my book, and I sell a lot that way. I sell a lot of books that way.
The cookies come with the book, right?
Yeah, right. And I also write a monthly column for a website known as www.40sphotos.com. Now, he's actually an Englishman who takes very high-quality photos of reenactments. Now, over in Europe, they actually have World War II reenacting because they had actual battles there in Europe. We don't have that here in the United States. Most of our reenactors are revolutionary or Civil War reenactors, but they have reenactors over there. And I write a monthly column for him on a different subject for World War II every month, and I'm having a lot of fun with that because I try to highlight unsung heroes. No offense to your grandfather, but we all know about the generals and the admirals. I try to pick people that nobody's really heard of, and I write about them.
So where do you find your material? How are you getting it?
Oh, my goodness. There are so many stories out there. Do you know what someone said? Actually, friends of mine send me ideas for stories, and I just found out recently there was in England, they had games of Monopoly in which they would hide little, I don't know, military secrets inside the playing pieces, and they would give out these Monopoly games. I don't really know all the details of the story. I'm going to research it. Fascinating to me. I mean, there's all kinds of Hedy Lamarr. You probably heard of her. She's an actress.
Yeah.
She was actually very important in developing some kind of technology used in communications in the war. So there's all kinds of stories people don't know about, that it was just a wonderful time where, as they say, everybody pitched in, and I'm just having a ball uncovering all these stories.
So there's no problem with material to work on.
No problem with material. No problem. No.
And the website is, again, 40sphotos.com?
40sphotos.com.
40s.
It's F-O-R-T-I-E-S.
Okay.
Photos.com. And my column is called Dispatches.
Dispatches.
Yeah.
And how many other people are writing on this thing?
No, just me.
Just you.
He's the photographer, and he put the word out on Twitter. He said, I really need a writer. I said, I'll do it. So I'm working for him. His name is Michael Caine, not the actor, but he's a British guy.
So Michael is bringing photos to bring your articles to life?
Yes, yes. Yes.
Does he research,
I usually come up with the photos, and then sometimes he adds to them. Like, I did a recent piece on Mo Berg. He was a Jewish fellow, went to Princeton, had a brilliant mind. He read 10 newspapers every day, and he became a baseball player. Never was really good, but he went over and toured Japan with Babe Ruth and Lou Gehrig back in the day, and the press wondered out loud, why are they sending Mo Berg over there? He's like, not a great ball player. He's going with these other guys. Well, it turned out he was a spy. And so I have a whole article on him. And Michael at the 40s photo, he added some other pictures of Mo Berg. And actually, there is a movie out about Mo Berg as well and what he did.
So if people are interested in getting your book, they can go to Amazon.
They can go to Amazon.
Or do you have your own website?
I do have my own website called NoOrdinarySoldier.com. And you can go to Amazon, or you can go to Barnes & Noble's and purchase it.
There you go. Her name is Liz Kilmore Williams. And the book again? No Ordinary Soldier, My Father's Two Wars. Good to get an update and see you again, Liz.
Good to see you, Manny.
And congratulations on how well everything is going for you.
Thank you so much.
All right. All right. And that's going to wrap up our Straight Talk program live from Substation 2. Cherry Road across from Winthrop, presented by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax. You're with Founders. Our thanks to our co-sponsor today, Comporium, your friendly neighborhood tech giant. And, of course, we broadcast live every day from Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop, where we prepare fresh subs and salads 7 days a week right before your eyes, and there's only one way to do it. Slice, slice, slice. Garden, garden, garden. Have yourself a wonderful day. We'll see you on the radio tomorrow. Bye.